Part 11, Chapter 8. The shift that went on duty at the end of day 86 began like any other shift. The vein had been narrowing lately, pinching out. They tried not to be hopeful, but shift ends, when they had not found the pocket yet, were always a bitter disappointment. Dunaldine, recovered from the cave-in, was operating a chattering spade bit, sweat streaming off him in the closed, hot confines of the drift. He had a sudden illusion that a drop of sweat had turned color as it dropped into his eye. He switched off the spade bit to clear his vision. He looked again in front of him through the swirling smoke and white dust. The illusion was still there. But it wasn't an illusion. A single round spot of glowing yellow marked the shining white vein. He put the spade bit against it and turned it on. The chattering edge bit further. He shut it off and walked closer to the vein. He stood stock still and then let out a blasting whistle to stop the shift. He pointed, and then bedlam broke loose. It was gold! They had finally hit the second pocket. The shift abruptly left off, shouting, and every bit and drill they had down there began to cut into the vein. The wire gold began to blossom against the white. An excited call went to the duty watch in town, and in a handful of minutes they had the third shift helping them. The town went wild. Every Scot and even two of the old widows helped form a human bucket line out of the mine, weighing, sacking, and loading bag after bag of mixed wire gold and quartz. To the devil with the odd bits of rock. The gold was like twisted springs and small cages of gleaming yellow. Before sunset, on day 88, they had the whole pocket out. 1,647 pounds it weighed out, subtracting the rock. Adding to that the 306 pounds they already had, it made 1,953 pounds. It was short of a ton, but it would have to do. The project was on its way. They began to oil their assault rifles. The parson prayed long and earnestly for their success. There were no parallels for odds such as these. Part 11, Chapter 9. Turl waited, trying to be casual, in front of the U.S. Mint. It was 2 hours after sunset on day 89. It was good and dark. There would be no moon these next 3 nights. The weather on this cursed planet was on the edge of spring. There had already been a warm day or two. All the snow was gone. It was reasonably warm tonight, and he had been prepared to wait. Animals were pretty stupid about time. He was leaning against a flatbed truck he had driven in from the base. It was a shabby relic, not even on the inventory. It wouldn't be missed. He had prepared it carefully. But right on time, there were the animals. With only a pinpoint of light pointed at the ground, their vehicle rolled up and stopped a few feet from Turl. It was heavily laden. So they had kept their part of the bargain after all. Yes, animals certainly were stupid. There were 3 man-things in the cab, but Turl couldn't restrain his eagerness. He walked over to the flatbed and began to poke talons and a light into the sacks. Wire gold. Unrefined, unmelted, a bit of the white quartz clinging. No, here were some melted chunks. He remembered himself and stood back and played a radiation detector on the sacks. Clean. He estimated the load by a practiced glance at the pistons that supported the body over the driving mechanism. Allowing for the slight weight of the man-things, maybe 400 pounds, and for the debris, he must have about 1,900 pounds here. Recent trade papers told him that gold in its scarcity at home had soared to 8,321 galactic credits an ounce. This load was worth about, he was very good at figures in his head, about 189,718,800 credits. Several dozen fortunes. Wealth and power. He felt very expansive. The animals hadn't gotten out of the cab. Turl went to the side of it and flashed a subdued light into it. These fellows all had black beards. Actually, it was Dunaldine, Dwight, and another Scot. Turl went through a pantomime, seeking to ask where the animal Johnny was. The pantomime might or might not have been comprehensible, but Dwight, who spoke Cyclo, knew exactly what was meant. Purposely speaking in broken Cyclo, Dwight said,
"Johnny not can come. Him have accident. Him hurt foot. He say we come. Much apology."
Turl was a bit taken aback by the information. It upset his planning. But yes, in the recon drone pictures this afternoon, he had noticed an overturned blade scraper at the site and had seen no sign of the blonde-bearded Johnny, who for months had always been visible. Well, no matter. It didn't upset much. It just delayed getting rid of the females. A hurt foot wouldn't stop that animal's psychic powers if he touched the females ahead of time. And if aroused, they could cause mischief. No mischief that he, Turl, couldn't handle.
"We help transfer sacks to other truck," said Dwight. Turl had never intended that.
"No!"
he said, making wide, explicit motions, rather hard to see in the dark.
"We just swap trucks. You get it? I keep your truck, you take this truck."
The three Scots piled out of the huge cab of the Cyclo truck they had brought and got into Turl's. Dunaldine took the controls. He started the motors and made a wide sweep in the street, turning back the way they had come. Turl stood with a waiting smile upon his mouth bones. The truck went up to the corner and turned into a side street, out of sight of Turl. Dunaldine hastily punched in the numbers to keep it going down the slope. He looked sideways to make sure Dwight and the other Scot had the door open.
"Go!"
he barked. The other two dove out the door. Dunaldine shot his own door open and in a rolled fall hit the soft turf of the street. He glanced back. The other two were up and running for cover, a pair of darker blurs in the dark. He yanked a heat detector shield out of his belt and began to run to an alley. He made it. The flatbed went on down the street for another 100 yards. It exploded with a battering, violent concussion that blew in the buildings on both sides of the street. Back at the gold-laden flatbed, Turl chuckled. He could hear the patter of pieces beginning to hit as they returned to Earth for blocks around. There was a roaring sigh as some buildings collapsed. He was pleased. He would have been more pleased if the animal had been in it. He didn't have to go and look. He wouldn't have found anything anyway. The distance-fused demolition charge had been placed under the cab seats. Turl got in the laden truck and drove to the smelter he had rigged. He had done number 5 of 7 alternate, possible actions in booby-trapping and sending the truck back. It had been dicey pre-calculating the options. The teams in anti-heat capes drew back from the surrounding buildings. They collected Dunaldine and the other two and went off for stage 2. Would they be this fortunate next time? Dicey indeed, outguessing a mad cyclo.